Shavuato world. Today's daf in Masechet Menachot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKadesh, is daf Lamed Dalet, and we're holding four lines down. Itma. Lul patuach min habayit la'aliyah. So now we have a standard situation over here, in which you have an upstairs and a downstairs. Both the upstairs apartment and the downstairs apartment have separate doors to the outside. So this is a stairwell between the two apartments. That is not the way that you get in from the street. And it's additional to the main doors. So now what's often done is that both sides on top and on bottom, the stairwell is enclosed. And on top you have a lock on the door to prevent people from downstairs coming upstairs. And on the bottom, you have a lock to prevent people from coming up from the upstairs to the downstairs. So each one of these has a lock. We're assuming that the Heker Tzir was in the direction that would be mechayev them, the mezuzah, on their way into the other person's house. So then this would be like a classic situation where you've got the main doors, you still have the main doors, but you have additional doors besides those main doors. So Rav Huna says, it depends whether you've got a lock on both the upstairs as a door, and there's a door on the downstairs, and you put two separate locks there, and each one opens up with its own Heker Tzir. So in Yeshlo Petach Echad, so if it only has one door and each person has a lock on the other side, so then you just put in one mezuzah on the direction of the Heker Tzir. But if there's two doors, one on top and one on the bottom, that open in opposite directions, say each one is opening up into the stairwell, so then if there's two, so then you have to put on two mezuzahs, one each one of the directions in. Amar of Papa, since in this case there are two other doors into the building, and the upstairs you get in through a door from the outside, and the outside stairwell, and the downstairs you get in directly from the garden door. So what that would mean is that if you have an indruna, let's take this now, instead of focusing on the two stories, which is not really important, what's important is that we have a large living area that has four doors, basically. So you've got like a wall in between the two living areas with doors going on there. And it seems to be that even though the main doors would be the doors that people are walking into the house from, which is the outside door, nonetheless, you need four separate mezuzahs, one in each way that you're going to come in. Well, I mean, isn't that obvious? How would we think otherwise? Well, lo tzricha af agav d'rogel b'chad. Remember that actually we even said before that if you've got two doors, that you go according to the ragil, right? So over here, that means we were talking about the case of Rebbe, and when Rebbe's got his door that goes into the Beis HaMedrash from his house, so we said over there, you're supposed to be olach achar haragil. So you would have thought that over here, you would also say that you should go according to the ragil. So lo tzricha, hafagav d'rogel b'chad. So over here, look, both of these people have got their doors to the outside. I mean, this is not the main way. They certainly don't walk in from the upstairs to get downstairs, and you don't walk in downstairs to get upstairs. Each one of these have their normal way of going. So you would think that even though you have clearly a mezuzah in each one of these homes that is the main mezuzah, that doesn't make any difference. So the question is, why does it make any difference? If we said before that it certainly does make a difference, and all of a sudden now we're saying it doesn't make a difference. So there's a number of different, quite a few different approaches. Rashi brings a number of approaches. One is that if you've got two doors, you could say that one of those doors is bottled to the other door. But if you've got four doors, you're not going to say that three doors are going to be bottled to one door. The other approach is very simple. That in the case of Rebbe, that's a unique case. The case of Rebbe is that you have a door that is only used by that one person. It's not a normal door. It was a door that was, he was coming into the side so that people wouldn't have to stand up for him when he came into the Beis HaMedrash. So then, if there's one door that's considered to be the door to the Beis HaMedrash, you have hundreds of people coming through that door, and then you've got one person that's coming through the other door, so then there's a concept of ragil. If this is not the main door into the place, so that's what we were saying, you go bust to the ragil. Omra Mema, Hai Pitcha de Akarna, Chayav b'mezuzah. Now that this seems to go against some of the issues that we thought we understood before about what happens when there's no real mezuzah. And that what you're using is just the walls. And the walls are the mezuzah. So the Parshana explanation of Akarna would be that, let's imagine a closed room. So you have a closed chamber. Four sides of this chamber are in, it's completely enclosed. Now you saw off one of the corners. So now you've made yourself a diagonal door on that corner. There are no mezuzahs here at all. There's just walls. You're going to put a door up against, on an angle, against one wall that's going like we had before on the south side, one wall that's going on the west side, when we compared it to the Mizbeach. So you put it over there, but you don't have any frame at all. So basically, there are no mezuzot at all. And nonetheless, a Meimar is saying, you're chayev in a mezuzah. So Rav Ashi said to him, what do you mean you're chayev in a mezuzah? But it doesn't have any petsimim. Remember that petsimim are the word that we used for the frame that is frames the entryway. When we were talking about the achsadra, we talked about the petsimim. So what happened to all of that? Okay, big shot. All of these guys from Joburg, you know, I got to dock on time. I didn't leave anything for you guys because you're big talkers. You and the big N over there. Well, yeah, we can get there. No problem. We got a BB hiding his face, a big N hiding his face. At least Suri shows up, you know, but he didn't get his father there on time. Next time you say 8 o'clock, I'm going to figure
it out. Yeah, Rebbe.
Yeah. Now you're here. You weren't there when you should have been there. I'm telling you, he thinks because he's got that fancy gray hair, now he can talk back. Look at that. I love him. All right. Yeah, it's a good thing you're muted. All right. So anyway, so over here, we're saying that the actual walls are the equivalent of the tzimim. And we didn't think that before when we were talking about the cases of the achsadra and so on. So we're going to have to go over the cases and see like what the difference would be. So over here, he's stating that it's exactly as if you have tzimim. Why? Amale, adi b'tzimi. Can't these be essentially the frame? Because for all intents and purposes, you have set aside a frame. When you cut off the edge of that that square room, you cut off one edge. So now the wall going in one direction, it creates, together with the wall in the other direction, and together with the piece running across the top, it creates a frame for all intents and purposes. And therefore, it would be chayev in a mezuzah. Rav Papa came to House of Mar Shmuel, and he had a house where there was only one patsim. And that patsim was on the left side. So how did that happen? So basically, he also, let's imagine the square room, he had a door in the corner, not cutting out that side. So he had, let's say, the south wall came all the way up to the end. He put the tzir on the wall. So he connected, that door opened up into the wall. It didn't open up on a mezuzah at all. It was just connected to the wall on his right side. On the left side, where there was a continuation of the other wall, over there, he put a board. So he saw that he made a mezuzah over there on that right side. So Rav Papa asked, Mar Shmuel, I don't understand why you're putting up a mezuzah. Come on, Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir says, as we'll see in a moment, that even if you only have patsim echad, Rebbe Meir says you're still chayev in a mezuzah. But that's not true in this case, because Emar D'Yomar Rebbe Meir, when did Rebbe Meir say that if you have patsim echad, that it would be chayev in a mezuzah? That would be where the patsim was on the right. So over there, that patsim is right to be called a mezuzah ha-pesach. And as we're going to see, we learn out from the Posik that the mezuzah always has to be on the right side of the entry, so there's a mezuzah on the right side. So Rabbi Meir says, if there's a mezuzah on the right side, a mezuzah meaning a mezuzah tapetach, a patzim, so then you put a mezuzah on that mezuzah tapetach. But Rabbi Meir never said, mismol, mismol, miyamar. Where did he ever say such a thing? I don't see how you would say this. So now, the question over here is, how exactly does this differ from the other case that we were just talking about a minute ago? So, I mean, there are other Rishonim who explained that the case over here was that there was nothing but three walls. There was not a fourth wall that had the patzim, like we were saying, that ade patzime, this becomes the patzime. We don't say that here. And therefore, the case would have to be, they're getting ahead of me over here. The case would have to be that there was no wall at all on the fourth side. And the fourth side was completely open. And now he would be saying that a completely open fourth side would still be chayev on a mezuzah, which is completely astira to the case of the achsadra, because in the achsadra, we said that we look at the sides and we say those sides are only there to support the ceiling. But where do you see that they should be called a mezuzah at all? So those who learn that the sugya over here is talking about a completely open fourth side have to be machalik between the Gemara we had yesterday about an achsadra and this case. So the case, the explanation would be that over here, there is a fourth side, but the fourth side is the door itself, the entry door. And so because of that, it would be considered to be, even though an achsadra is potter, this would be an actual area that would be chayef. And we would look at the walls, since lemaisa, they are framing for a door. That turns it into a full-scale house with a door. There's also an alternative. The alternative is to learn that the case is not precisely like Rashi is talking about, but rather that Mashmuel's house had the wall on the right side that did not stop at the same place that the patzim on the left side stopped. That was the problem. The wall continued on. So if the wall continued on, just on that side, on the right side, so that means it was not a wall that was even framing a doorway. That was the problem. If it was framing a doorway, then it should have been the same as the first case. The way to distinguish the two cases is that over here you had one long wall on the right, continued on past the door. And then in the middle of that wall, coming from the left side, you had the other wall. We call that the western wall, and that the long wall was the southern wall. And you had a door in the middle of the southern wall. So if it's in the middle, that's what he was asking him. I mean, that doesn't even bear the word patzim in any way, because it doesn't frame the doorway, it doesn't frame the entry. So there's literally, that would only work out according to Rabbi Meir, who holds that a doorway framing only needs one side of the frame. So therefore, he tied it. Yes, that's true. But which side? The right side, not the left side. Because it has to be the side that the Torah is going to be mechayev on derech biatcha, as we're going to see later. Okay, so we have a number of different approaches to how this all works. Where do you get that idea that it has to be on the right side anyway? I mean, Rabbi Meir didn't say that. So why are you taking that for granted? Mahi, what is this all based on? Ah, the Tanya, Beitecha, the fact that it says Beitecha, it means as you are coming into your house, not as you're going out of your house. So it's davka bi'atcha, going into your house, and that has to be the right. Huh? You say so. I'm asking you where you get that from. Atalomer min hayamin, maybe it means mismo. No. In order to make that clear, that's why it says betecha. How does betecha show you that? Omar Rabba, the word betecha also is merames on bi'atecha, which means the way that you're coming into Beitecha. So first of all, let's orient ourselves. We're orienting ourselves on the outside of the house towards the inside of the house. Now, it's also saying that once you're coming into this, it means that you're coming into it the way that you would normally walk. Derech biyatcha. How do you normally walk? Well, most people are right-footed. And since they're right-footed, if they're standing still, and now they have to come into the house, they move their right foot first. And therefore, it would mean, when a person starts to move his legs, it's his right leg that he usually will move first. And therefore, that's why I said that even if Rabbi Meir holds that you can get away with one patsim, it would have to be the patsim that the Torah holds is that patsim which is machayev you. Rav Shmuel Bar Acha, commander of Papa, Mishmei the Rav Barula, Amar, that's not where we learn it out. What's the matter with you guys? You didn't go to hear the Haftorah today. It says Beferish in Haftorah. Vayikach yo yada kohen aron achad v'yikov chor bebalto. So, how did yo yada, where did yo yada put that pushket to make sure everybody puts in the money that he owes to the Berech HaBayit? It says, Vayitenu to etzal mizbeach miyamin bavo ish beit Hashem. So you see, if you want to put something there that people are going to be aware of as they walk in, it's going to be on the right hand side. And so that shows you that that must be the derech when it says biyatcha. Forget about right handed and right legged. It's irrelevant whether this guy happens to be left legged. The point is that this is where we put something that is the derech habiyat. It says in the pasuk. Anyway, what's this mime of Rabbi Meir that you all keep referring to? Because I'm not familiar with it. So my Rabbi Meir, where did Rabbi Meir say that you only need a patsim echad? The Tanya, it says, Bayit she'in lo ela patsim echad. Rabbi Meir says, af al pikein, yuchayev b'mizuzah. And the Chachorim say, no, that's not considered to be a petach. Why would the Chachomim say no, my timer? Because it says beferish. Mizuzot. It says mizuzot betecha. The miut mizuzot is two. It's Loshen Rabbim. And my time in Rabbi Meir, who says that even mizuzah achat is chayev, because the Tanya. Here's how he learns it. Since it says al mizuzot betecha, so I would have thought, the way our Gemara just asked here in the Braita, I would have thought, Shemeani, miut mizuzot shtai. Oh, so that itself is saying a minimum of two mizuzot. But then, the Torah goes on and says, v'hayayim shamoa, and it ends with the same words. Why did it have to say that? It already had said that it's mizuzot betecha. So why do you have to repeat again that it's the mizuzot? Havi riboy acharibui, ve'ein riboy acharibui elamait. So our klal is that when the Torah insists on a particular halacha that it's being marba the extra mizuzah, if it was marba it twice, it's gufa coming to tell me, and don't think that this is the only mizuzah that you're chayev on. Whereas shnei petzimim, you would be chayev even on one. Miyato akatuv lemizuzah achat. So now we just actually limited it to even working on a case where there's one mizuzah. So says Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva Eimer, you don't need all of this. If you take a look at the first place where the Torah describes the concept of the mezuzah, which was Beitzias Mitzrayim. So what does it say over there? So when you're going to put the dam, it says al ha-mashkof al shtei ha-mezuzot. Why did it have to say shtei ha-mezuzot? Why wouldn't it say al ha-mashkof al ha-mezuzot? She'in tamad lo mashtei? So I know how to read. Mezuzot is Loshen Rabbim. So if you would tell me, put it on the top of the lintel and on the mezuzot, it's obvious to me that you've got to put it on three places, right? So if it says shtayim bedavka, that's coming to teach me a b'nei av, וכל מקום שנאמר מזוזות אינו אלא אחס עד שיפרוט לך כתוב שתיים. That actually, unless the Torah defines it as the shtei mezuzot, the word mezuzot itself means a mezuzah. It doesn't mean the both of the mezuzot. So that's why Rabbi Meir says, if you have one mezuzah, so then it doesn't say over your shtei mezuzot, it says mezuzot betecha. That's the svara of Rabbi Meir.
And what do the Chachamim do about that? They don't learn that?
Are you happy with it?
Well, I'm not good with Rabbi Meir, but
Tana Rabbanan Uchtaftam. So this word Uchtaftam, which is can be read Ktivatama, as we'll see, Uchtaftam, because if then B'derech Tmimus, it should be a Shlema Ktav. So you might think that you should write the mezuzah right on the door. So here you are walking into one of these long Rova Yehudi entranceways. You should just write the whole Parsha of Shema, Vayim Shemoah, write it right there on the wall, on the stones, and it would be a very modern mezuzah, the best. After all, it says, Al Mezuzot Beitecha. So how do we know that that's not true? Because Ne'emar Kan Ketiva. Here's the Lashon of Yeruch Taftam. And it also uses the Lashon of Ketiva. Now, we saw this before when we were making the Gezer Shav of Ketiva. Ketiva, Rashi kept referring to Sefer Kritut by a get. And as Tosis pointed out over there, it makes no sense to learn it from get because the dinim that we're trying to learn from a get aren't even true by a get. And Tosis says that the Gemara is referring to the Ketiva of Parshas Saita. Well, over there, all of those dinim of Ksiva, like Ksiva of Sefer Torah, it specifies there that you do need to have it the same way you would write it in the Sefer Torah. So just like it says, B'negeya, the Mezuzah Ksiva, so according to Tosfos, it says also B'negeya Megillas Saita Ksiva. Ma'al halan ala Sefer, Afkan ala Sefer. So it must mean you write it on a piece of cloth. Well, that's not very persuasive, because I could look at it as very much the opposite. It says here, b'nogei mezuzah uchtafta. So that's ketiva. And remember where it also says ketiva? It's a beautiful mitzvah to write on stone. Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to write the whole Torah, and this was take the avonim, katavta al avonim, et kol divrei haTorah zot bahar etev, says ksiva, on avonim. So that means you can write on the stones, on the entranceway into your home, the same way you would write it on the ktiva that Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to write. Why not? That's also called beferish, katavta al avonim. So mala lana avanim, afkana avanim. So what makes you think that the ktiva is the ktiva that should be ktiva of the Megillah Saita or ktiva beget? Well, let me ask you, which one do you think is more reasonable? Nira lami dome. I mean, I think danim ktivano heget ledorot, miktivano heget ledorot. Look, the Moshe Rabbeinu is writing the sefer, the whole Torah on avanim. Was like a one-time event in the Knesa La'aretz and at the time that they were preparing for Knesa La'aretz, right? Okay, so that's a one-time event. I mean, here we're talking about mezuzah that goes through all of the dayreis, and it makes sense to learn it from something that is a chi of the dayreis, which is either Rashi's approach of a get ala sefer, sefer kritut, or Tosis's approach of a Saita, and the cuss of the Sefer for the Sota. So it makes more sense, I think. Danin ketivano heget ledorot, mitivano heget ledorot. Makes much more sense to learn it from events that are milgea every day, like the Mezuzot Beitecha, and ein danin ketivano heget ledorot, miktivash enun heget ledorot. We're not going to learn a ketiva for all generations from a one-time event in all of history. Remember, we saw this later on when Yirmiyahu, we learned it out before when we were talking about the mezuzah. that actually Baruch ben Neriya said to them when they were doing this investigation, who wrote this Megillas Eicha anyway? So Baruch said, Mipi v'yikrai lai et kol ha'dvarim ha'ele, and ani kotev al ha'sefer b'dyo. So you see that it's clearly a din of Ktiva is with Dyo al ha'sefer, not on Avonim. Omalei Rav Acha b'rei the Rav Rav Ashi. I don't like this analysis. I don't like it one bit. I mean, you can make these analyses if you don't have any indication as to what we're talking about, then you can use your imagination to make whatever kind of reasonable assumptions you can make. I mean, so you're telling me, well, we have two types of ksiva, one on the Avonim and one on the Sefer, and it makes more sense to learn it from the Sefer than it does from the Avonim. And I say, that's ridiculous. Take a look at the Pasuk, okay? What's the simple meaning of a Pasuk? The Pasuk says to write these words, Al Mezuzot Beitecha. Does it say that? Yes. Now, how do you write words on the mezuzah of your home? Well, you certainly don't take a piece of paper and write it on the paper and then stick the paper on your home. You write it on the mezuzahs of your home. Isn't that the simple meaning of it? So if we find the Lashon of Ksiva applies to Avonim, so then that's the most reasonable, just from the simple meaning of the Pasuk. You can't ignore the meaning of the Pasuk and say, let's run out from Dereis instead of Mishah. No, let's not. Let's learn out from what it's clear that the Pasuk is referring to. Instead of making the Pasuk mean something totally different than what it says, write it on the wall. Al Mezuzot Beitecha. I don't understand how you could do that. So Rav Ashi answered him, well, that's because it says Uchtav Tam. That's what we started off trying to figure out. The meaning of Ktiva Tamma. Since it says you have to write it Tamma, you cannot write Tamma on stones. You can write Tamma on a piece of paper or a clear cloth if we're going to have a marker for what type of material that's been. Now it's been processed in such a way that you can write on it clearly, beautifully. You try writing on stone or you try writing on wood. I mean, it's got all kinds of notches in it and it's impossible to write. You can't write like that on stone. So since the Torah specified the Ktiva Tama, so then that's what it must be, that you put that on your mezuzah, but it's, you can't possibly write it directly on the mezuzah. Wait a minute. Now, I mean, you didn't say that originally. You said that we have to learn it out from Gezeirah Shavah. If you're telling me that the only way that I can understand the meaning of the Uchtav Tam is by putting it on a piece of paper or a piece of cloth, why did you have to learn it from the Megillah Seita? You could have just said, well, the Torah said Uchtav Tam. You don't expect somebody to be able to write it Uchtav Tam on the wall, do you? So that's all you needed to say. I mean, obviously, this was not persuasive enough to help you. You said I need to learn it out of Gezeirah Shavah. So now when I come along and I ask you, yeah, but that's not a reasonable Gezeirah Shavah. We should choose the Gezeirah Shavah to Avoni. Now all of a sudden, you pop out of your inside pocket. Well, what about Uchtav Tam? We didn't say that in the first place. I'll tell you why. Because if it wouldn't be for the Gezeirah Shavah, you know what I would have said? I would have said, listen, you know, Rav Ashi's absolutely right. It says to write it on the wall. So how can I write it on the wall? So I learned it out, you know. I can write it on the wall by chiseling it into the stone. Now, it's true I can't chisel the stone very well if the stone is already standing up, but I could chisel the stone and then put it up, you know. So Elav Gzeirah Shavah. So I can do that very beautifully. Ktiva Tama. I mean, come on. You know, to actually etch it into the stone, you can get beautiful writing etched into stone. I mean, you can't do it with a pen, I understand, but you could certainly do it by etching it in. Therefore, I need to know if we learn out. I would think, okay, I have no choice. But if it says that there's a lashon of ktiva that has to do with the Sota, so then it makes sense that now I'll write it on something that allows for Ktiva Tama and is also called Ktiva, because anyway, I can't write it directly on the wall, So why should, now I'm back to the Gezeirah Shavah. Okay, so what makes more sense? To write it on a stone and then put the stone on the wall? Or to write it on a cloth and then put the cloth on the wall? So I'm saying it makes more sense to learn Ksiva L'Derech from Ksiva L'Derech. That makes perfectly good sense. But now we understand that you're not going to be able to be Mekayim the Pashtus of that pasuk anyway. That's what I'm showing you. So that's what the Uchtav Tam proves to us. Okay, this completes our discussion of Mezuzah. Now, the Gemara moves on here to the next piece of the Mishnah. The next piece of the Mishnah introduces the Inyanim of Tefillin. So, what the Mishnah said next was, Arba Parshiyot Shebet Tefillin Me'akvot Zo Et Zo. Same Mishnah that we had with the Shtei Parshiyot of the Mezuzah. And just like we had by the Mezuzah, afilu ktav echad mi'akvam, even one letter is going to destroy your tefillin. If any of the parshiyot of the tefillin have one letter that's not proper, then the whole tefillin are useless. Well, I mean, obviously. I mean, either it is tefillin or it's not tefillin. So, I mean, if we need for the tefillin to be written as they are, v'hayu, and so on. That is one of those existential words that means it's got to be this way. And if it's not this way, it's no good. I know how to read. So what are you telling me? I need a Mishnah to tell me something that's obvious? Pshita. Well, same terrors that we gave by the Mezuzah originally. What we're talking about is the Kutzai Shal Yud. As we explained the Kutzai Shal Yud before, that's the reference. Remember, we had like three different approaches. Rashi learns the Kutzar Shal Yud was the little curved inner piece of the Yud on the right side. The Rabbeinu Tam learns it's the piece that continues down after the Yud on the left side at the bottom. And the Rosh learns it's the piece of the Yud that goes up on the left side. Fine, so that's what it means over here. So this is the Kutzar Shal Yud. I don't understand. If a Kutzar Shal Yud is the way that the letter has to be written, so then the Vahayu and the Ktav Tam tells us that's the way it needs to be written. I don't understand why I need the Mishnah. You haven't helped me. It still doesn't make any sense. So not me Pshita. Either it is a Yud or it's not a Yud. I mean, so if it's not a Yud, so then it's obviously missing and it's Posel. Ah. L'Nisrcha, same way we came out with the Mezuzah. L'Nisrcha, L'Le'idach Rabbi Yehuda. It's coming to tell me the other Kiddush of Rabbi Yehuda. The Amr of Yoram Rav, Kol Ot She'in Gvil Mukafla Mi'arba Ruchutea, and you will remember the Machlokas Rashi and Tesis, and of course many other Rishonim get involved, that it means, according to Rashi, it merely means that you cannot have a Negiyah of one letter to another letter. Because if it's touching the other letter, then that letter is not completely surrounded by cloth. And therefore, it's sort of a letter floating in the air. It's not a letter that is connected, bichlal, to what it needs to be on. Where the other Rishonim learn, it needs to be surrounded by cloth such that you can't write it at the edge. Because if you write it at the edge, the part that's at the edge doesn't have any cloth that is extending beyond that edge. So that's basically, this is the same sugya that we had before. We don't have to go through it. Again, it's the exact same issue. Now, let's take a look at the more detailed dinim of tefillin. Okay, so Tana Rabbana. First of all, where do we get the idea that we've got these four parshiot in our tefillin shel Rosh? So the parshas is that we darshan the three times that it says l'totafot. Two of those times are written l'totefet, and one actually it's written l'tatefet. There's both vavs are missing. And in the third time that it's written, so what we have is basically, we've got the Kadesh Li Kol Bechor, the Haya Ki Yiviyacha, Shema, and the Haya Im Shamoa. In all of these places, it refers to the need for you to have tefillin. In three places, those tefillin are called the Totefet. Fine. So in the first three that we mentioned in the actually not the, we mentioned it not in order. So in Kadesh and in Shema, Vayim Shamoa. So it says Totafet. Now, in the last one, it says Ule Totafot, and it has two extra vavs in that Ule Totafot. One, the first to remember in Shema, Vayim Shamoa, is Le Totafot, has no vav in it at all. And it's not viletotafot, vayu litotafot, and it's written as if it's litatefet. And the third time, it's written ulitotafot, but the extra vav is between the tet and the tet, not between the pay and the tuf. And it actually adds a vav at the beginning of the word ulitotafot beneinecha. Now, it's because of that, this is how Tosfos understands the sugya. There are gersaot, which apparently are mistaken, and they think that it's written letotafot with a vav between the pay and the tuf, but it's not. If it were written letotafot, so then it would be a lashon rabim, even if you go according not to the kriya, but you would be going according to the way it's written, which is yesh em lemasoret, not yesh em lemikra. You remember all of these dinim? These are Gavi rules. Mr. Gavi has to show himself with his magic pen, and then you'll remember. So we have that machlokas, whether you go according to the, fundamentally yesh em to the way things are read, or whether yesh em to the way that they're written. All right, so Rabbi Yishmael holds you go according to the way that they're written, and even though the vav does not come between the pay and the tuf, remember that we have another Gavi concept, which is called the Gor'in Umosifin. Gor'in Umosifin is that when we have an extra letter that isn't teaching us anything, we can move it from the place where it occurs, and we can insert it where it will be teaching us something. And that means that the extra vav in letotafot is not going to teach us anything unless it turns the word letotafot into a lashon rabi. And therefore, we have tatefet, tatefet, totafot, which means tatefet is one, tatefet again is two, and totafot is plus two equals four. This is Rabbi Yishmael's drasha. First of all, what is a totefet anyway? What does it even mean? Well, we find the word totefet, as Tosus points out, when we're talking about the type of tachshitim that women wear. So they're called totefets and sarvitim. We have that b'mai isha yotzeit on Shabbat. And it refers to a little crown-like thing that's put on top of the forehead. So it's the name of a particular piece of jewelry. It's a tiara, I think they call it in English. But it even sounds a little bit like totefet. So that's what the simple meaning of it is. And it also means, as Tosis points out, that it is something that looks. Because remember, in the beautiful story about Avigail, who says to David HaMelech, where he's not quite David HaMelech yet. So it says over there that the Gemara says, look at this woman, you know, she's pretending to have her head down on the ground, you know, but she's already making sure that David gets the message, you know, when this bum drops dead, I want to be your wife, you know. So the Gemara brings a very cute mushroom for that. So they say, you know what they say? They say the goose keeps its head down, but its eyes are always looking ahead, you know? So that's exactly what's happening over here. And it says taifa. It uses the word shofil va'azil bar avza. The goose shuffles around, but its enayim are mitafim, which is the lashon of gazing straight ahead, right? So you see, totefet is al shem the lashon of bein einecha. So it makes sense that this is a tachshit bein einayim. So since it repeats the word four, so it means that there's four elements in this tachshit. And therefore, this equals, says Rabbi Yishmael, four different simanim, which are the four, we'll see, we have four batim, and each one of the parshias that mentions wearing tefillin, each one of those parshas, whether it calls it a totefes or calls it a zikaron, each one of those parshas takes up one of those otiot in one of those containers. So there's got to be four signs on your head. So how do we make those four signs? Okay, that we'll get to. But this is Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva says you don't need to play games with the number of vavs and the totafot and the lashon rabim and the lashon yachid. You don't need to play games. Because the word itself, if you take a look in its other languages, totafot is actually two different words, and it's tat pat. So tat always means two, at least if you live in Kaspi, and pat, if you live somewhere in Africa, I don't know if you guys know where, but may not be in your local makolet, but pat in Afrika means two. So tat pat is basically a four-piece zikaron. So you're supposed to have this four-piece zikaron. Anyway, all right, that's all that we've learned so far. Four-piece zikaron does not tell us how to make it. All it tells us is that there should be like four signs on your head. Now, it's not clear whether those are like, you know, four different tefillin that you put on your head. How do you make that? So, Tana Rabbana, you might think that you should write the four different parshiot, the Shema, Vayim, Shemoa, Kadesh, and Vahoya Kiviyacha. Obviously not in that order, because the order in which it appears in the Torah, of course, is Kadesh, Kadesh L'Kol B'chor, and then Vahoya Kiviyacha, which comes immediately afterwards, and then Shema, and then a parsha later, Vayim Shamoa. Okay, that would be the order. So you might think that you should write these four things on four different pieces of cloth and skin, put these four things into four separate holders, each one of which would be the tefillin, a separate tefillin, each one made out of arba orot, so that you would have these four little batim and you would put them across your head. That would be the pashtas of translating the Totefet. Talmud lomar u'zikaron b'neinecha. Now remember that the last parsha has the tefillin not as Totefet, but as a zikaron. Zikaron is one zikaron. So gufa, what we learn from there is that the four remazim have to all be one thing. V'lo shnayim v'shlosha zikronot. Okay, so I thought you said that we need to have four. So how does that work? Oh, so I'll tell you what you do. You write four separate pieces of cloth. Each one of them has one of those parshas. So you have the Kadesh L'Kol B'chor, and you have Vahoya Kiviyacha, and you have Shema, and you have Vayayim Shomoa. Fine. So now we've got our four. And then what do? You write these four, and you put them into four separate chambers, which are all made out of one piece. So that one piece makes it into the Zikaron Echad. Now, is that absolutely necessary? No, because what we were referring to in the Totafot was the actual chambers, because that was the thing that's going to be seen from the outside. So what if you wrote all four on one long piece of parchment, and then you stuck them into the four compartments? Now, let's just remember how this is done. I'm sure you've all seen raw tefillin just to have a sense of what it is. But basically, the raw tefillin is like a glove that fits on your fingers, but it only has place for four fingers. Those four fingers are a place for the four parshiyos of the Shema. And then they're all, since it's all one glove, they're all connected to each other because the part that surrounds your hand, that part continues to stick out. Now, in the tefillin, what you will do is you'll cut off the bottom of the glove, and just the part, the long part that comes down across your palm, you'll take that, you'll put that part over the four fingers, sew down the four fingers to that part. And now, but you have a basic tefillin. So you have these four fingers sticking out, and you've got them all covered from the bottom with the bottom of the glove. And that's your basic idea of your tefillin, except that you cover it on the top so it doesn't look like four separate pieces, and you make it all one piece. That's the way they used to make tefillin. It was very difficult to make tefillin the way we make tefillin. And we're makpid that it should be like those shitas that hold the whole thing has to be made out of one piece of wood, of one piece of part of skin that ends up looking like a solid piece of wood, and it becomes almost like plastic art tefillin. They didn't used to have such completely finished, hard tefillin. You could actually still feel and press the tefillin and feel the parshas inside, as we'll see. But anyway, so now, if you have, let's imagine you have this, the tefillin opened upside down in front of you, you're looking into the box of the tefillin, and you see four chambers, right? Now, you want to not write four separate different parchments. What if you want to just write all four of them on one long thing, like you have in the Shel Yad? And then you want to stuff in each one into a different compartment. So if you leave enough room between the separate parshios, then you'd be able to stuff in, you'd bend the cloth, stick it into a chamber, and even though it's connected on the bottom to the next parsha, you could bend that parsha, put it into the next chamber, and so on. And then you'll have all these parshas are connected to each other, but you left enough room between them that they all fit into one of those chambers. So if you want to do that, you'd be yotze, because the totafot is not referring to the pieces of cloth that you write it on. The totafot is referring to the number of chambers, the batim that you have, the housing for it. So as long as there's four houses, you're yotze. Doesn't matter how you manage to stuff in the actual parshios, as long as you leave space between them. So if you put four one orot with four parshiot into the four batim, you'd be yotzeh. But tzarik shei revach b'neihem, divrei Rebbe. You're going to have enough space between them so that you could insert them straight up, and it would still look beautiful, because each piece would be standing straight in each one. Obviously, when you put it in, it's upside down. And then when you put your tefillin up, so you'd have each parsha sticking up. So you'd have Kadesh, V'haya Kiviyacha, Shema, and V'haya Im Shamoa, right? Everything good so far? It's very important to imagine what this looks like, because it's easy to get confused here. Are we clear about what this looks like, gentlemen? Okay, so that would be all right. But you must leave space. Mashenke, the Chachomim say, no, you don't need to leave space, because you are making the assumption that each one of these pieces of dafim that are written on the same piece of cloth have to be necessarily sticking up and fitting nicely into each one of these batim. That's not true. You could basically hold that a little tiny bit of space is enough, because you don't have to stuff them in so that they go all the way inside and they're sticking up. It would be enough that you insert them a little bit. So you don't need a bunch of space, like Rebbe was saying. You need a little bit of space, and that way they're separate parshios. But both Rebbe and the Chachamim are Meida v'shavin shenotein chut o mishicha bein kol achat v'achat. You definitely do. Now, this is also a machlokas. We say you definitely do, because some learn that this is only talking about the case where you actually chose this option of writing all of the Arba Parshios on one cloth, and now you're going to be sticking them in. So because of the fact that when you write it on one cloth, you are less separating out the four batim that are inside of your tefillin, so in order to make it clear that these are separate batim, you need to put between each and every one of these batim, you need to put a string and some type of cord that goes between them, which proves that these are separate, because otherwise you won't really have any indication that they're separate. Now, if Lamaisa, you had tefillin like there used to be, you would be able to feel the tefillin, you'd feel inside that it's all, just by pressing up on your tefillin from underneath, you would feel that there's only one parsha in the tefillah. So in order to make it clear that these are four separate batim, and that there's got to be separation, which we are unable to feel from the bottom, and therefore we make sure that you put the string in between, so that you've got a break between each one of these four batim. So that even though they came very close, of course what we do if we use the Or Echad, what they used to do is they used to use glue to make it very close together, and they wouldn't necessarily be makbid on Or Echad. The cheap tefillin were just, they used one piece of Or that they surrounded the whole thing with, and it wasn't really all one piece, but it was glued together. Okay, many of the poskim held that that wasn't really kosher. Those were called the Dakas tefillin. I don't know if any of you remember. It used to be that you had a choice of buying tefillin that were Gazes and tefillin that were Dakas. So Dakas tefillin were made from small animals, like kvasim and so on, which it was easy to use their skin. You could even make them from bird skin. Doesn't necessarily need to be chal to be an animal skin. And it was very easy to manipulate that. And in order to make it the equivalent of Or Echad, you would just glue on one piece of skin over the four to make it one, but then you'd have to make sure that you make a scratch, a charitz, that goes between each one of these chambers, because otherwise they disappear. Okay, so you need to have that. Lemaisis, Tosis Springs over here, there are those who hold, and that is the minigma of everyone, that you need to be able to see that there are four separate chambers, and there needs to be a charitz on your tefillin shorosh, that makes it clear that these are four separate pieces. And therefore, in ein charitzan nikar, in a case where you used only one daf to write it on one piece of parchment for the four dafim, then they would be pasul because there's no indication bichlal that you have a clear totefet, so to speak, a clear four totefets. So in ein charitzan nikar pesulot. Again, as I mentioned to you, this is according to almost everyone only where you used a single piece of parchment. It would be puzzle if it's not nikar. Tana rabban. Okay. Now, how do you write the tefillin? Well, it depends. The tefillah shel yad. Your tefillin shel yad, you write on one piece of skin. So it's a long piece of cloth. If you write them on four separate klafim, as long as you put them in one bayit, they're good for your tefillin shel yad. But you have to actually stick them together with glue or by sewing them together before you put them in, because otherwise it'll be tasa bin v'lom in ha'asui, and they have to be a single oat. Since it says v'ayalecha lo'ot ayadecha, so then that means that even to you, it needs to be one oat. So the fact that for everybody else who looks at it, they only see one bayit. So when they see one bayit, that's very nice from their point of view. But what about you? What do you mean, what about me? How am I going to know what's in there? That's the point, gentlemen. You will know what's in there if you were wearing old-fashioned tefillin. Because you can easily press against your tefillin and feel that there's only one parsha in there, or feel that there's separate parshiot in there. So therefore, in order for it to be lecha, even intimately, you who are wearing those tefillin need to have only a single oat. Therefore, you have to paste them together. So says Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi Omer, no, it is not important. Lechatchila, yes, but it's not important. It's not going to be ma'akev b'diavad. And it's fine to just have the four parshas together in one of your, in one bayit, and that's a kosher shoyad. And furthermore, says Rabbi Yossi, even though Rabbi Yehuda made a big stink about it, and he said you have to sew it together, let me tell you something. Rabbi Yehuda is moda to me, and he's a great man. This is Rabbi Yehuda bar Rebbe, you know? So he's such a great man that he's moda that if you don't have a tefillin shel yad, and you only have two tefillin shel rosh, that you can simply take one piece of or put it over one of your two tefillin shel roshes, then you make it all look like one, and now you don't have four separate totafot, and then you can turn it into a tefillin shel yad. Even though in the tefillin shel rosh, you had each piece of these parshios was on a separate cloth. What are you talking about? How could he be moded? That's the main thing he was arguing about. What do you mean he's moded to me? That's what he was saying. You can't have them if they're not sewn together before they were put in. And so how in the world could you turn your tefillin shel rosh into a shel yad? What are you talking about? Oh, my Rava, gentlemen, this is just a very nice way for Rabbi Yossi to say that Rabbi Yehuda is so great that he surrendered to my approach. That's all he's saying. So he's saying, Midvarav Sherabi Yossi, what he's really telling you is, he changed his mind. But remember, a foolish inconsistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. So he's a great man. This is Rabbi Yehuda bar Rebbe. And he was made it to me. I didn't want to say it too openly. So he said he's made it in this case. That was the case, is the one I was pointing out. What do you mean in that case? That is the case. Yeah, okay, that is the case. Shh. All right. Chozerbo Rabbi Yehuda. Now, we've got another problem. Our other problem, of course, is I thought you can't make a Kiddusha Chamura to a Kiddusha Kala. That's another thing. You didn't even talk about that. What about the problem of turning the Tefillin Shel Rosh? We talked about this before. We said the Tefillin Shel Rosh is considered to be more Chomor in its Kiddusha. You're not allowed to make it. So what about that? Hashach Rebbe Chananya, Mishmei de Rebbe Yochanan, Tefillin Shel Yad. Yeah, you could turn a Tefillin Shel Yad and turn it into a Tefillin Shel Rosh. We don't have any problem. You'd have to make, of course, four separate pieces and take one of the parshas, either Bekut or as we said, you can even have them together. That you can do. But you can't do the other way around. And you said you could. Mishel Rosh, Eino Simotar Shel Yad, how are you ignoring that problem? That's another issue. That's it's usher to do this. It's not a problem. It's only usher to do it if you already wore those tefillin. If you once wore those tefillin as a tefillin shel rosh, so now they get the kedusha of the tefillin shel rosh because that was the tashmish that you made of them, which was a higher level of kedusha. But if you never use them, and the sofer delivered to you two tefillin shel rosh instead of a tefillin shel yad, what are you going to do? Well, you just put a piece of skin over it and you turn the tefillin shel rosh, one of them, into a tefillin shel yad. Because it was never used anyway, so it never got any kind of kedusha. Shelo kasha. Where Rabbi Yochanan said you can't do that, he's talking about where it was once used. So it's old. Old meaning that it was used once. Habratikta. And what Rabbi Yossi says, that there's no problem in doing it, he's talking about chadita. These are brand new tefillin. They arrived from the sofer, a little bit of an error, but easily fixed. So you take a piece of skin and you put it over the tefillin. No problem. But wait a minute. What about according to Mandi Omar, who holds another Gavi rule? Hazmana miltahi. How about if you hold that defining something in advance for its use gives it that din? Remember, we had this question about whether a bathroom is a bathroom only when it's been used, or a bathroom is a bathroom when it's been defined as a bathroom and it's never been used. And we have this shaila in many, many different places, right? So does hazmana, does defining something at this is what I'm building this for. Okay, so over here you were making it as a tefillin shel rosh. You're saying, well, if it wasn't used, it doesn't matter. But if you hold Hazmana miltahi, another Gavi rule, which you better make sure it appears, if you hold Hazmana miltahi, or in brackets, lav, miltahi, so then, how are you going to explain it? Then, even if it were never used, it would still be usur to be moved from the Kedusha Kala, the Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala. So, lamandi amar Hazmana miltahi, how would it work? Very simple. Even if you hold Hazmana miltahi, you can make up front a t'nai, and you could say, I am making these tefillin to be either a tefillin shel rosh if they're needed as a tefillin shel rosh, or they can be turned into a tefillin shel yad if we don't need another pair of a tefillin shel rosh. Fine. So far, all is A-OK. But we haven't gotten to how exactly we're supposed to construct the tefillin. But you know what? I think this whole big issue about tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam or tefillin of Rashi, we can wait till tomorrow for that. We've almost completed it. I've kept you a little bit beyond the time I wanted to keep you, but it's fun. Okay. I see nobody agrees with me, but maybe if I keep repeating it's fun, someone will believe it. Siri thinks it's fun. So said someone. Richie thinks it's fun. There you go. Richie always thinks it's fun. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful Shavuot Tov, Umavurach, with Besirot Tovot, Hinei El Yeshua Siyef, Tach V'lo Avchad, and we'll see you, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow. Continuing on with the Seder of the Parshios and all kinds of other fascinating, interesting things. You got to admit, it's very interesting, right? You're finally getting insights into all of these sugyas. It's great. Okay, Leitraot and Shavuot Tov.